Welcome, everybody, to a very special two-man edition of the Nerd Watch for this week, September 3rd week, is it? Second week of September 2015. I am joined by a special guest, nay, one of the founders of Nerd Watch, and special guest, the one and only, if you can believe it, I don't have Gannon or Format with me tonight. I'll let you know what happened yesterday in a moment, but let me introduce to you the one, the only, the man, the movie critic himself, the professor of cinema, ladies and gentlemen, Professor Barry. Yay! Professor Barry's in the house. Thank Professor you. Barry.
Thank you.
How are you, sir?
Doing good.
How have you been?
Great. Just busy.
We miss you on the show.
Thank you. Miss you guys too.
We miss having you on the show. We miss your interactions. We miss having your input. And we certainly miss having discussions about movies and things of that nature, and the I guess you could call it the inner workings of messages in the films and things like that. So we miss it. We definitely miss that for sure.
Thank you.
What we do, here's one thing that we do enjoy, the fact that you're not there. We started a great game called What Would Barry Rate It? So every time, and you're a stickler, listen, there's no other way around it.
So the backhanded compliments come.
Right, right. You're a star stickler.
I'm tough.
You're
I'm
a tough guy.
I'm a tough critic.
So we play a game where we watch a movie, and then we make an assumption of what Barry would rate the movie. If I can give you a little...
A little taste. Oh, please.
Taste.
Please, yes.
We did the visit this past week. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, because of a programming error, that great show that we did on yesterday, unfortunately, that great show will not see the light of day. We had a software problem, and it was an amazing show. But on that show, we played What Would Barry Rate It with the visit. Okay? Can I tell you right now that we've done this several times, and nothing... From Barry's film out or the films that he's done critiques on, nothing from our guesses has gone over 2.5 stars. Nothing.
Absolutely. So basically, nothing. You guys assume that I don't like anything. Really.
Nothing has gone over 2.5 stars.
Nothing makes me happy.
Yeah, it's just a bit, right. Nothing makes this guy happy. So we did it with the visit, and Professor Barry watched it. We did a little impromptu nerd watch date, I called it yesterday when we did the show that you will never hear. We did an impromptu nerd watch date and we watched The Visit together. Mm-hmm. Gannon also saw that film, and ironically enough, both of them, both Format and Gannon, guessed that you gave The Visit 2.5 stars. Mm. Obviously from what I said earlier. But they were so surprised that Professor Barry would give The Visit a 3-star review that they nearly had heart attacks.
Heart attacks? Total extreme.
But listen, we will get into more of your critique of The Visit because I want to talk to you about it because you and I saw it together.
Yeah.
You can justify your 3-star review. But first, apparently you have some interesting announcements to make because you've been gone for a while, working and doing what you got to do. So what's happening, sir? What's going on in Professor Barry's world?
Well, in addition to all the fun little things I'm doing and, you know, and the real work I'm doing, as you know and as listeners know, in February I started the Hawaii Film Critics Society.
Yes, sir.
This is something I'd always wanted to see. Even as a kid living out here, I always wondered, why does Hawaii not have its own Film Critics Society? Why does L.A. and New York and everywhere else, but there's not one in Hawaii? So in February, after a bit of doing to get it started, we finally got it going. It's been a quiet start because, you know, most film critic societies, people don't even know that they're there until the award season happens. Well, we're getting towards award seasons. Things are beginning to crackle. And one of the things that made me so excited about coming on the show tonight, mm-hmm, was I have a big announcement of two new critics who are a part of the Hawaii Film Critics Society.
Pray tell, who would these... two rather stuffy men be, or women?
Well, the first guy, I know he's one of these guys, a writer like myself, who walks around with a pad and pen wherever he goes. He's
right.
A consistent writer. He's working on his first novel.
Yes.
And a very talented, gifted really a natural film critic, if you will, a guy who has a lot of passion as well as a just real strong skills as a writer. He goes by the name of Format, but his name is Jason David.
Well, congratulations, Mr. Format, Mr. Jason David, for making the cut to the Hawaii Film Critics Society. Bravo. Good for him. And pray tell, who also made the list? You said there were two.
There were two. The other gentleman I've known for 9 years now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. He is, that's a long time.
It's a long time. And he's had a real versatile career doing all sorts of different things on the island of Maui, but also a gifted writer, a really strong writer, a very opinionated writer, a passionate writer, and a true aficionado, and a real real friend to film. This is a gentleman who I've said a number of times over the years, if I needed a substitute teacher for the film classes I taught at the university level, this is a guy who I would love to have stand in for me.
Wow!
The gentleman is none other than a guy who goes by the name of AZD, but he is officially recognized by the Hawaii Film Critics Society by his given name, which is Gregory Turner.
Wait. AZD, are you sure?
Oh, I mean G Money. Sorry.
Okay, because
I can't believe I did that. Sorry,
that's completely fine.
I just completely blew my speech.
I'll cut it out.
Do you want me to do that again?
Take two. One more time. Let me cut that piece out, and then let's do that intro one more time.
All right.
Just let's. I'm gonna act surprised.
You want to hear it all over again?
Yeah. I'm gonna act surprised. And I had a follow up. That's why. So let's do not the whole thing. Let's start from the part where you said that the guy would be taking over your classes.
Okay.
Go. So take two.
This is a guy who I've said a number of times over the years, if I ever needed somebody to be a substitute teacher for me to fill in on my film classes, this is the guy because he loves film as much as I do. The gentleman goes by the name on this show as G Money, but his given name is Greg Turner, and that is the name being recognized by the Hawaii Film Critics Society as its newest member.
That G Money guy's a douche. I don't know if you've met him, but he's a total douche. Bad choice. Absolutely bad choice for the Hawaii Film Critics Society. Sorry.
It's the downfall now.
It's the downfall
now. It's the beginning of the end for us.
To be quite honest, I am very humbled to be a part of this, Barry. It's something I never thought I would do. I'm not sure about format, but this is something – writing was never something that I ever thought would be an avenue for me to partake in. Matter of fact, when I was younger, I always thought that writing was – I never got anything out of it. Until I started writing about movies, when you forced me to write movies, I never – there's something freeing about it. It's really weird. Like I never, you know, I don't think orator is the right word. That's speaking. I don't think I put my thoughts well on the page, but I think that now I get better every time I do a review.
You do. Yep.
And I really enjoy it, and I'm humbled by the fact that you guys would even remotely think of me to be a part of the Hawaii Film Critics Society. And it's nice to be a part of your childhood dream. Which is very cool.
Wonderful. Because honestly, like that was one of the things about this that fills me with such pride and joy that you guys are in. This is not nepotism. You guys did the work. It was a vote by the other members of
the society. Could you tell the people that the votes that were cast were not for people that didn't know us?
Oh, yeah. These are guys you've never met. In fact, one of them I've never met. Myung Choi, who writes for Frolic Hawaii on Oahu. Rick Chattanever, who is a friend of mine. He lives here on Maui. He has been a writer of film and local events for the Maui News for decades now. And then arguably, I think the gentleman who's probably the most, let's just say the most famous, because he's the televised film critic for Hawaii News now, and that's Terry Hunter. Mm. I gave him examples of your work. We took a vote, and they agreed with me that you guys got the stuff, so you're in.
Fantastic. I'll look for this Terry Hunter guy. I don't watch local news that often, so I've heard the name. So I mean, I don't mean to disparage Mr. Hunter by any stretch.
Well, he likes you.
Good. I'm glad. I will like him in return. I'll do what Donald Trump does. If you like me, I will like you.
And now we're quoting Donald
now
Trump.
We're quoting Donald
this really
Trump.
Is the downfall
this
of the Hawaii
downfall
Film Critics Society.
So now, with that in mind, it's nice to have a critic society that. Let me take that back. Why don't you explain why a film critic society is important to the island?
Well, it represents, you know, in a way, it represents the voice of the film critics out here. Hawaii used to have so many more film critics, and over the years, you know, so many magazines and newspapers have folded. You know, a lot of the reviews that you read in a lot of, I won't name them, but like local papers and local magazines, it's Associated Press, good film critics, but film critics from the mainland. There are so many film critics out here, and Hawaii is such a film-rich society. People love film out here. People love to make film out here. People are passionate about film. We've got some of the best film festivals in the world out here, and yet there's never been a film critic society, which I find outrageous because this is a perfect place for that. So in this sense, you know, with the members of the Film Critics Society voting, and hopefully, obviously, I want this society to grow bigger over time.
Absolutely,
obviously, but at this very start, it's like you guys we're a microcosm of the film committee out here. You know, or rather the film community out here. I mean, so you know, we'll be voting on our pick for the Best Picture 2015, Best Director, Best Actor, all that. Even we'll also have a category, Best Special Effects, Worst Picture of 2015. It's going to be fun, and we'll vote on it. And obviously, you know, it's not a matter of we don't sit in a table and yell at each other. It's simply just unanimous votes, and I tally them up, and I'll publish them and share them with everybody.
I do enjoy the sitting around the table and yelling at each other, though.
Yes.
We
could do that, too.
There's something about confrontation that I kind of enjoy, especially when it comes to debate. But it's amazing to me that you're absolutely right. The fact that Hawaii never had a Hawaii Film Critics Society is absolutely outrageous, number one. Number two, if I'm not mistaken, according to you, we officially now have more members in our Hawaii Film Critics Society than the one in England. Is that not correct?
I haven't checked the numbers, but there was one in Canada and one in England. I won't say which one.
And they've been around a lot longer.
A lot longer and more esteemed because of the name of those particular towns and cities, which I won't say. But yes, they had less members than we did. One had three and another had two. And again, I'm not going to say what they are because that wouldn't be nice.
Sure.
But yeah, considerably less than us. So I don't feel even remotely ashamed of the fact that there's currently six of us. And that's fine. We'll grow.
Amazing. We'll absolutely grow. And I think this is a I think once the Hawaii Film Critics Society starts to get established and we bring out our picks, I think we'll be more recognized, which would be a lot of fun.
Yes.
You know, I'm not going to lie. I'd like to see the logo of the Hawaii Film Critics Society on a movie. That'd be awesome. Just saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, one of the things I love, too, is that we have one of the categories that I made sure that will be recognized, and I just got it approved today. But I said, yes, they will definitely want this to be on the press release when we release our picks of the year.
Sure.
Best Hawaii film.
Sure.
A way to recognize Hawaii filmmakers and Hawaii writers, Hawaii directors. I mean, this is not only a way to, you know, to spread our love for film, but also for the film community out here.
Well, I am deeply humbled, and I think this is...
So you accept the position?
Not only do I accept it, I also want to know how much it pays. If you just give me a number, I'll totally just throw some...
Okay, it looks like this. It looks like the letter O.
Oh, okay. I got you.
Imagine that as a number.
Okay, so I do this because for love of film. That's what I do it for. To be honest, in all honesty, I jest. But Hawaii Film Critics Society is going to be a big thing coming up very shortly. Every single town, city, or state, even country has their own film critics society.
More or less, yeah.
So it's nice to know that Hawaii will finally be recognized, and it gives us an opportunity to share our love for film. To other countries, other states. It would be amazing.
I would love, I mean, this is just hypothetical, but I would love for us to, like, our pick for the best picture there would be something so outrageous. Like, everyone else is, like, whatever, all over, like, the new Todd Haynes movie. We're like, best picture of the year, Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
And right.
That'd be so great.
Who are these guys? What's exactly. That'd be fantastic. Well, listen, once again, Barry, I really appreciate it. And whatever I can do to help promote the Hawaii Film Critics Society, I can't wait to get my ugly mug up on that... website.
Man, we're excited to get your mug up there. So.
Fantastic. Well, listen, any other big news you got?
I have a story I want to share with you. And it's got an appropriately Shyamalan-like twist.
Oh, stop it.
It's not Shyamalan-twisty enough, but it would have been one of his better twists, let's put it that way.
Okay.
And this involves this show directly, but I promise I am going somewhere with this brief story.
By the way, before you just – let me interject. If you're wondering why – the show sounds a little strange today. It's because we're doing it in another location that is basically not the location we normally do it in. We did the show yesterday at Maui Comics and Collectibles. Unfortunately, that didn't work out the way I wanted it to. Just to let you know, that was one of the best shows ever, and you'll never hear it. Yet I'll say it again. But we're at an undisclosed location that, let's say, it's a fixer-upper.
It's a bomb shelter in Kahului.
Yeah. So if it does sound a little different, don't worry. We'll be back to normal next week, Tuesday, for sure. But I'm glad to have Professor Barry in tow tonight. So anyway, Professor Barry, please go along with your story.
Yeah. Well, a few weeks ago, I saw Evita at the castle. You know, David C. Johnson directed this big...
Is that going to be the one with Amy Hennigan?
That was the one, yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. It's Come and Gone. It was only there for 2 weeks, which is... It should have been for 2 months.
If I may, how was she?
It was amazing. Even better than she was back in 1992, the first time she did it. She was terrific. Yeah, it was an amazing performance.
She's better than Madonna?
You know, very different, completely different interpretation, probably closer to Patti LuPone on Broadway, actually.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Patti LuPone, she hasn't been liking the audiences in Broadway much lately. She's taking phones away, and did you hear about that?
Yeah, I heard about that. Hey, she does not put up with a bad audience.
She does not put up with a bad audience, for sure.
She likes a good crowd.
But anyway, so you went to Evita.
So I went and saw Evita, and the lights come up, and it's intermission. And I'm in a seat. I'm in a good seat, but it's in a really awkward place where it's like it's hard to get up and walk around because there's other people around. Right. Anyway, I noticed that in the row in front of me to the far right, and I hope he doesn't mind me dropping his name in the show, though I know he's a fan, Ruben Carrion. You know Ruben?
I do not.
That's okay. You might recognize him if you saw him. Ruben is he's a very talented actor. I've known him for years, or I had known him for years. He's one of these guys who I did a lot of theater with 20 years ago with Sue Loudon at the Baldwin Theater Guild. He's an extremely talented guy. He's everything from Shakespeare and musicals. A few years ago, there was this thing at the EL Theater. They did a reenactment of Pulp Fiction, and he played the Samuel Jackson role. Ruben's one of these guys who could play anything. He's a great local actor. And I hadn't seen him in 20 years. So he's sitting in front of me, but to the far left, and I want to get over there and talk to him. I turn to Julie. I'm like, Jules, that's Ruben. Like, we were in the Sound of Music 20 years ago. So, like, I want to get over to talk to him, but it's a little awkward because there's people around, and I'm trying to, like, I want to, like, get over there, but I don't want to, you know, be, like, a menace. So I end up trying to, like, Plastic Man myself, like, across the aisle and, like, reach out my hand to catch his attention. And I managed to go over to him for a second. I'm like, Ruben, hey, Barry Wurst, I just saw you in the Addams Family. You were great. Do you remember me? And I think somebody moved behind me or something, so I immediately go back to my seat. And that's the end of the conversation. And Julia turns to me. She's like, that was really awkward. I'm like, I know. I can't believe I blew it. Like, I hadn't seen the guy in 20 years. Now he's not going to want to talk to me. So I'm feeling really embarrassed. Like, ugh. Like, I'll see if I could, like, send him an email later or something. That was so stupid. He finds a way. A few minutes pass, and he comes up to me now. He actually makes his way down the aisle. He's sitting directly in front of me. He holds up his phone. And on the phone is the Nerdwatch logo. And he goes, I'm a fan of your show. I've been listening to your show for a while. I'm a fan of you and Format and G-Money and Alika. I've been listening to all your shows. And he's asking me questions about the show. Like he's like, whatever happened to Collector J? I'm like, oh, well, he's still doing stuff on Maui Watch. He's like, what happened to you? You haven't been on the show for a few weeks. I said, yeah, you know, I've been busy with work. And he's like, you know, the guys, they got this game they play when you're not there. He's like, they didn't think you'd like Straight out of Compton. It was the coolest thing.
Awesome.
And then like, sure enough, the lights started dim, and he immediately went back to his seat, and I gave him a little wave and a smile. So anyway, all that to say, the musical Evita was magnificent, but bumping into Ruben that night, it totally made my night. So Ruben, if you're listening, thank you so much. That was very humbling. Thank you. I'm so glad you remembered who I am, and I'm glad you're a fan of the Nerdwatch. That's awesome.
I think it's amazing. Ruben, thank you so much for listening. We certainly do appreciate it. Your support is definitely needed. Please tell a friend, tell your neighbors, tell them we're we try to be a fun show to listen with the youngsters about movies and games and all of this stuff. So Ruben, we certainly appreciate your listening to the Nerd Watch. I really appreciate that. That's awesome.
Yep.
That's very cool.
Yeah,
hey, he holds up with the logo and everything.
Yeah, that's crazy. I was stunned. I'm like, oh my god, you know who I am, and you listen to this show. That's so great.
That's so
insane.
Cool.
Insane.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. So speaking of shows, Ruben. If he is a fan, maybe, just maybe, he's more than happy. We'd be more than happy to have him, comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdwatch. If you see a movie posted, let us know about it. We want to know. Ruben, let us know, please, by all means. But We watched a movie. You and I, sir.
We did.
You and I.
Opening night.
Opening night. We watched the M. Night Shyamalan film, The Visit. We haven't heard hide nor hair from M. Night in, I would say, is it since The Happening, or did he do something after The Happening?
It was After Earth.
After Earth,
The Will Smith debacle.
The Will Smith thing. That wasn't even his original story, was it?
They're credited as writing it together.
Oh, okay.
So they both like worked on the story.
All right, so we decide to go into The Visit. Now, we already gave away the lead. We already gave away the farm when we said that you're going to rate it 3 stars. They don't know my review yet, but... let's talk a little bit about why you think that The Visit deserves a 3-star review from Professor Barry.
I think bottom line, it's an effective horror movie. I found it really frightening. Initially, I wasn't sure how the movie would go out. We talked about it in the lobby afterwards, how Shyamalan has made a series of thrillers that didn't work because most of them were unintentionally campy or unintentionally hilarious in the case of The Happening. Just disasters because they become these unintentional comedies. And it seemed for this film, he was anticipating people would kind of snicker at how ridiculous the premise is.
Right.
So he brought in a lot of comic relief. There are a lot of one-liners. There's a lot of comic undertones throughout the movie. And the whole movie plays almost like a black comedy, if you want to look at it that way.
Sure, no, you're right.
Like a darkly humored comedy. And I think for the most part, it works in that respect. Because as we noted, there's some scenes in this movie that are really quite frightening. And the fact that there's like one-liners to undercut the tension, I thought really helped. But bottom line is, this movie really goes for the throat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really violent film for a PG-13 movie.
Yeah.
Once the twist is out in the open, and I found it to be a really scary twist. And one that the more I think about it, I think that's some really scary stuff. That's really clever. It seems like Shyamalan is really going like... It's almost like he's trying to make up for the fact that his last few movies did not deliver, and he's just trying to strangle his audiences with this movie. I think a really aggressively scary movie. There were a number of scenes where the audience members were screaming audibly, and in some cases you go, okay, like it's probably a little too young to see a movie like this. Of course they're going to scream.
Yeah.
Even I was jumping. I mean, this is a really scary movie. And
it's quite effective.
I enjoyed the atmosphere of it. The lead actress, Deanna Dunnigan, thank you. Yeah, she's a Tony Award-winning actress. This is her first big film role as the grandmother. I thought she was sensational. Gives a genuinely scary performance.
And Peter McRobbie was the grandfather.
Yes, and he's a character actor who's been in so many movies, mm-hmm. and I thought he did a nice job. Really underplayed it. Didn't really go like as aggressively as she does. But she, like, I think she'll be like one of these actresses whose name will pop up when we talk about kind of the female equivalent of like Robert Englund. I think she'll be like one of these actresses I think will probably pop up at horror conventions and people will line up by the droves to get her autograph.
Sure.
This is one of those kind of performances.
Right.
And the movie's scary. As a found footage movie, I think it works. It presents itself to be from the point of view of the granddaughter who wants to capture her weekend with her grandparents who she'd never met before. I think it works. There's almost no music in the film, which is smart because a lot of these found footage horror movies, they have soundtracks, which doesn't make any sense at all.
Correct.
It plays by that rule. I thought it seemed like Shyamalan had studied movies like Paranormal Activity and, you know, and all the ilk, everything from that stupid NASA movie a few years ago.
Was Apollo 18.
Yeah. Ugh. Like, it feels like he studied those movies and really understood what works. I mean, there's not to spoil it, but there, just a visual, there's a scene in the movie where the grandmother, for reasons that are actually very compelling, looks directly in the camera and just starts to scream her full head off. It's terrifying, and he understands that's one of the things that's so frightening about the found footage horror film. It's like you're in a haunted house, and things are all of a sudden just kind of sprung at you. It's not his best movie. I could have done without the little kid rapping. In fact, I didn't really like the kids. I rooted for them by default, but I didn't necessarily like them. But I think, not everything in the movie works. But I think its premise works. I found it frightening. And I think bottom line, it's a horror movie that's actually really frightening. And it's PG-13.
Yeah. Gannon said something interesting on the show that you'll never hear again. Gannon said something very interesting yesterday evening when we did the pod that you'll never hear. That he said that kid was borderline for him. He was good enough where he could have fallen over to annoyance. But he wasn't annoyed by him. I, on the other hand, kind of felt a little opposite because by the time the fourth or fifth rap kicked in, I was kind of done with the whole thing. I think that... I don't know how to... First off, before I get into my thing, you are solid at 3 stars for this film.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it's, you know, I'd say like if it was a letter grade, I'd say it's a B. It's not a B plus. It's not an A minus. I think that's, I would reserve that for The Sixth Sense or Unbreakable or The Village.
I think Unbreakable is widely underrated. Like, no one talks about that in this canon. It's always Sixth Sense, Sixth Sense, Sixth Sense.
Right. And in Sixth Sense, it serves. I mean, Sixth Sense is a... It's people forget how scary The Sixth Sense is.
Oh, it is. It's frightening.
It is a frightening movie. And the two lead performances, Bruce Willis and one of his best, and Haley Joel Osment, one of the great child performances. And there's a number of scenes in that movie that are just perfect. I mean, it really is one of the best films of its year. But I agree with you. Unbreakable took even more risks. Yeah. Unbreakable is, I mean, it's a strange film.
Absolutely.
And, it was released at Thanksgiving, and nobody knew what the film was until the day it opened. And, you know, it's the movie that gave us Heroes. It's the movie that gave us, you know, Kick-Ass and all these, you know, postmodern
movies. It was a comic book
movie
before a comic book movie was a comic book movie.
And it gave us a comic book movie that applied, on one hand, it follows all the rules of what we want for those films, but also it gives us something so distinctly different and strange and thoughtful. It's like all the comic book movies with all the action removed, but all of the heart intact.
Yeah. Moving on to The Visit for me, it's an amazing thing that I would actually go to a premiere of an M. Night Shyamalan movie. I never thought I'd do that ever. After The Happening, he screwed me. So I even forgave him for The Village. Even forgave him for
You're
The Village.
Not a fan of The Village.
Well, here's the thing. I was a fan of The Village up until we found out the twist. What I think would have been interesting is that if they had played it a little more humorously, I think the twist would have been a lot more fun.
Mm.
But of course, that wasn't the intent of the film.
Yeah.
But anyway, here's my take. And
we haven't mentioned Lady in the Water. Should we talk about Lady in the Water for
no,
a second?
No, let's don't. I was trying to forget that film. Yeah.
So for you, that was like no more.
That was, yeah. I was I could not handle that film after that. I mean, Paul Giamatti was great in it.
Yeah.
Bryce Dallas Howard, I could take or leave it in that role. I thought,
You like her as the Narf?
Oh, good lord. Anyway, I will say this, if I can, say something about M. Night Shyamalan's filmography. I'm actually a guy who kind of enjoyed The Last Airbender.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are going to give me a lot of hate
for
that.
Yeah, that'll be interesting.
But I enjoyed The Last
people
Airbender.
What did you think of that?
I'm sorry. Tell me why. I'm going to have to watch it again, I guess, but I actually enjoyed The Last Airbender.
That's okay. That's all right. I'll let the Hawaii Film Critics Society know.
Yeah, let them know. See if they pull my membership immediately.
Oh, you like that movie? Never mind.
We don't want them. It just totally redefines my douchiness for liking that film.
No, that's cool. You're the guy. You're the guy who liked it.
I'm the guy who liked the movie.
That's all right. That's cool.
Moving on to his version, or I shouldn't say his version, his vision, excuse me, his vision of The Visit. It was a film for me that I get to be the curmudgeonly critic this time around. I was not as enthralled by it as you were. As a matter of fact, once again, I'm going to keep reiterating. I said this on yesterday's podcast that you'll never hear because of the audio programming issue. I said that it was a film that had good ideas. I saw the twist telegraphed. I saw the twist telegraphed the moment they decided to drive up, the moment they decided in the film where they weren't going to the hospital anymore to do counseling.
Okay.
I already knew. That for me was the beacon that was like, okay, I obviously know what's going on. It didn't ruin the film for me at all because it's like, okay, I know, no big deal. I'm not going to reveal what it is, but I really was compelled in the very beginning of how the daughter of Catherine Hahn, she's affectionately referred to just as Mom,
right,
pretty much. She wants to not only give her mother a break because of she knows what she's gone through, but she's also wanted to give her a break because she's found a new love and she wanted to give them time. But more importantly, she wanted to, I guess, investigate the mystery of why her mother and her parents never reconciled their issue. Because we never know.
Yeah.
We never know in the beginning what the issue was. We never know any of that stuff. But she wants to solve the mystery and she wants to... It's almost as if she wants to put the family back together in a sense. But in some respects, she's just a filmmaker and she wants to film this. So with every interview, we slowly get to know a little more about the grandparents. We slowly get to know about these things. I think the thing that really, and I mentioned this to you, after we watched it. I think what really put me off on the film was the easy explanation of, well, Grandma's not feeling well. She's getting older. She has sundowners. Or Grandpa's not doing well because he poops his pants, kind of thing. I was like, well, you know, and it felt crass. Like, it was like being elderly was almost joke. It was almost a joke. And it almost felt like, I said this in my review, it's like, well, we don't understand it as kids, but you know what? It seems odd, so let's just film it. You know, that kind of felt a little crass to me, and I didn't appreciate that. It didn't take away too much of the joy of the film for me. I thought that there was genuinely funny parts. I thought there was genuinely frightening parts in the film, for sure. I never jump at films. I think I've told you this before. I'm always a guy that if I'm frightened, I'll crack a smile. And in this film, I did once or twice, and I thought it was very effectively done. I just thought that it just felt as if there was not enough. It almost felt to me like, and I'm taking this completely the wrong way, it felt like, maybe because I'm getting older, it felt like a commentary on the elderly, and I felt a little uncomfortable with it. And maybe that was the point. But
I don't think you take it the wrong way at all. No, I think you're onto something here.
Yeah.
This is a film that exploits real problems that elderly people go through.
Right, right. And like I said, and maybe, you know, this is coming from the guy that loves exploitation films. Hello, I'm the guy that loves those things. I like that stuff. But for this, it felt a little crass for me. They could have gone deeper. They could have, you know, they could have gone into the psyche of what it's like to have sundowners. But I know that wasn't this kind of movie. We had 90 minutes. That's right. What we had. So overall, for me, I would say ultimately, I would give it 2.5 stars just because of that. It was an enjoyable film. I thought the kids, I thought that the brother borderlined on annoyance. But I think what made it up for me was the one part of the film where he reenacts being his grandmother.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was totally crass, but totally funny.
It's a great visual.
It's a great visual. And it really worked for me, and I laughed. I laughed pretty hard. So if you're looking to get scared, or if you're looking to never, ever have to visit your grandparents again, watch The Visit. Matter of fact, in my review that I wrote, I put down that either A, he's just making that Shyamalan's making a scary movie, or he's working on his demons of not being hugged enough by his grandparents. I don't know. It could be either one. But I will say this. This does put him in a very good position in Hollywood because it didn't cost him very much to make it.
Yeah.
And number two, it made money.
Yes.
So this could be a resurgence for M. Night.
I hope so. He's talented. He's got filmmaking goods. He's a smart filmmaker. The material's got to be good. He's also one of these guys who he kind of needs somebody over their shoulder going, that doesn't necessarily work or that really works. And it feels like in this case, he had, you know, the support of the Blumhouse studio,
right,
the guys who did Insidious and Sinister, you know, looking over his shoulder saying, okay, this fits within our framework. We like low-budget films in which the horror is kind of, you know, more to the bone as opposed to CGI enhanced.
Right, right.
So I think sometimes filmmakers work really well within a very, I don't want to say limited range, but I think he works well when it almost works like a stage play or, you know, like they use the metaphor of like a toy chest. You have a toy chest, you've got a very specific set of toys, you could create a really wonderful toy village. Or if you have too big a toy chest, there's just pieces everywhere and they don't all connect.
Right.
And I feel like his worst films, there's just too many toys on the floor. It's just a mess.
Right.
But I feel like his best films, they're almost like chamber pieces. Like the Sixth Sense, it's really about two people, really.
Right, right.
And Unbreakable is really about three people or four people with a little boy. And I feel like that's something to consider as opposed to some of these bigger films he did, especially something like After Earth, where it's about two people and the two characters don't really work. And why are you putting one of the most charismatic actors on the planet in a role where he basically is sitting down and stuck to a spaceship for the whole film?
Now, here's an interesting thing. Not to veer off too far from this, but Bruce Willis was in his first two films.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis is actually famous in Hollywood for being kind of an actor that's over the shoulder and says, you know, this isn't going to work. We should cut this. We should get rid of this. And sometimes he comes off very much like someone you wouldn't want to work with. Maybe those two films were successful because Bruce Willis had a hand in possibly tailoring the script for M. Night, which is possible, I guess. And maybe he needs that. Maybe he needed that. Maybe he needed that kind of tailoring, not necessarily from Bruce Willis for sure, but Bruce Willis is famous for doing that. Is it possible that Bruce Willis's intervention could have made that film, those two films, success?
That's a great question. It's hard to say because Willis, he's always been one of my favorite actors because of the versatility of his choices. This guy's worked with everybody from like Terry Gilliam and Alan Rudolph.
But apparently not one of the greatest human beings alive.
Well, I don't know. I can't obviously vouch for his character. I'm a huge fan of him, so I am too. But I see what you're saying. I mean, on the one hand, here's the weird thing, like. He ended up doing The Sixth Sense because the story is he did this film for Disney called Broadway Baller, a boxing film, a period boxing piece. And in the middle of shooting, it was going to be directed, I believe, by Rowdy Harrington, I believe.
Really?
I believe that's the director.
Because he did the movie with Rowdy Harrington, Striking Distance?
Striking Distance, yeah. And I may not have that completely right. I think it was Harrington. But in any case, he was doing this movie. It didn't work out. He and the director came to verbal blows, not physical blows, and the production shut down. And this is a famous thing that happened in 98. Disney said, okay, we'll let you walk away from Broadway Baller, but you owe us three movies. One of the films he did was Armageddon, which was one of the biggest hits of its year. Then he did The Kid, which was successful. And then he did this little film, The Sixth Sense. Now, on The Sixth Sense, he's working with this guy, Shyamalan, who came off of this flop called Wide Awake, which nobody saw.
The one Rosie O'Donnell.
Total flop. Yeah. Miramax buried the film. So, like, Shyamalan had no power. All he had was this screenplay that everybody loved. And who's to say? Like, on the one hand, Willis could have completely just, like, thrown his weight around. But you look at that film, it's like there's a real, to use the word, symbiosis between the director and the actors. It feels like everybody was on the same team with that film. Because the tone and the mood of it is so specific. And it's such a quiet and perfectly paced and narratively structured film. It really is a perfect film.
Right, it is.
And if Willis had jumped in there being like, well, you know, this. No, I mean, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like when he loves the material and the guy who's directing at the helms, it feels like it's the perfect thing for him. But when, you know, if the director doesn't show confidence, it feels like that's when he'll swoop in.
Right.
Just from the things I've read about films
for sure.
Where, like, people have said, like, well, he was hard to work with. Well, maybe that director didn't really have the kind of confidence you need, you know, to keep...
For someone like Bruce.
A guy from New Jersey, used to be a bartender, now became the biggest movie star in the world, and knows that he can deliver when he's given the opportunity to deliver.
So, speaking of filmmakers, getting back to M. Night,
yep.
Do you think that he's learned from his mistakes? Do you think that the next film we're going to get is something unabashedly M. Night, or are we going to see the new M. Night?
I love M. Night, but I don't want to pretend like he's learned from his mistakes, and I'm assuming this because I read the book, The Man Who Heard Voices, which is about the making of Lady in the Water. It's a great book. And what I'm assuming is that he's always been one of these guys who have stuck to his guns no matter what. And he always makes these decisions for his films no matter what people are saying. So his films are distinctly his. I mean, I kind of suspect, and there's nothing wrong with this, but I kind of suspect if you were to ask him about The Happening, he would probably tell you, I think it's a great film. I worked really hard on it. I don't think he's aware that he has flops. I think he has these movies that he's aware of that aren't really well received, and he's probably pleased as punch that for once he's doing a movie that the critics like, that audiences like, that people are seeing. So I don't know. I'm guessing that he's one of these filmmakers, and he should have the confidence to say, like, I stand behind my work, you know. But I don't know if he's necessarily learned his lesson because, well, you remember the kid rapping in The Visit. Like, those moments remind me of all those weird scenes, the really out-of-place moments in Lady in the Water where you have the guy who's working out just one part of his body. It was like this guy at the hotel, the motel where Paul Giamatti works. And you get this guy who's, like, literally working out one side of his body. It's like this really, like, odd bit of humor.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah,
it was the movie they needed. It was totally out of place. It's like, why is that there? That doesn't, like, add color or flavor. It's just this weird touch that just feels like they really should have cut that out. Same with the kid rapping. It's like those moments in The Visit felt like, okay, this is him being a little self-indulgent. It doesn't ruin the movie, but the movie would have been so much stronger without those stupid interludes.
So hopefully his arrogance will not derail his next film.
Arrogance or what is it? I mean, it's just... His inability to I mean, you know, it's kind of like George Lucas saying, like, you know, I find Jar Jar Binks funny. And you go, okay, well, that I'm glad you find Jar Jar Binks funny, but maybe you should consider that not everybody else does, and this character doesn't really serve the movie as well as you think it does. Sometimes I just feel like there's certain directors, sometimes there's stuff that holds them back because they're not able to, you know, to use the expression, see the forest for the trees, or in this case, to note that a little boy rapping isn't really what this otherwise frightening horror movie needs.
Right. So with that in mind, we're looking forward to a hopefully renewed M. Night for his next film.
I hope so. Like, I heard he's going to go back and write his very, direct his very first screenplay that he ever wrote, and he's going to have Bruce Willis star in it, and I don't know what the genre is, just that it's a love story.
Wow. All right, well, The Visit. 2.5 stars for me, 3 stars for Barry. Is it worth watching in the theater?
I think so, certainly from the experience that we had. If you love horror films like I do, I think you need to see them with as packed an audience as you can, especially when they're teenagers and they're very afraid. So, yeah, cool. Perfect.
Well, listen, you're here, okay? Switching gears now.
Yep.
Since you're here, we did a top 5 bottom 2 movies of the summer. Do you have a top 5 movies? Do you have the top 5 movies of the summer on your list and the bottom 2?
Sure.
All right, so why don't we do that right now? Why don't you give us your top 5 movies of the summer?
Okay. Very top is Mad Max Fury Road. I think it's one of the best films of the year, and at this moment, it's probably my pick for Best Picture of the Year. That could always change, but right now, I mean, it's a terrific film. It's down, it's dirty, it's huge, and strangely personal at the same time. I never thought I'd see a movie like that, certainly not in the summertime, certainly not a sequel to something that came out 30 years prior. Perfect film. Love and Mercy, the Brian Wilson story.
Also, I can't wait to see that.
Also one of the great, great films of 2015. Perfect film. Loved it.
John Cusack, Elizabeth Banks.
And Paul Dano as Brian Wilson.
Paul Giamatti.
Paul Giamatti, brilliant in that film. Yeah, great, amazing movie. Let's see, after that, Jurassic World. I think Jurassic World really delivered. I had problems with it like you did, but I think overall, I think it worked perfectly.
Okay.
As for a summer movie. This is kind of an out of left field choice, but I want to support the movie because no one else did, and I love this film. That's Woody Allen's Irrational Man, a Woody Allen thriller.
The one about the professor who wants to kill somebody?
Something like that. Something like that. The trailer has been so great to not reveal the twist, so I want to be very careful about that. But it is a thriller, and it is about young people considering the act of murder. Joaquin Phoenix, Emma Stone, and Parker Posey are terrific. In fact, I think it's probably Emma Stone's best performance, honestly.
Wow.
Terrific film. So good. Nobody saw it, but it's a great film. And then, let's see, the other summer movie that I really, really loved, a real surprise, and I didn't get to talk to you guys about on the show, that was Ant-Man.
Okay.
I found Ant-Man to be very charming. I hate to call him out, but there's one thing wrong with the movie. I think it's Corey Stoll. I found his performance to be very awkward and disengaged from the rest of the movie. It felt like he was giving a very different performance from everybody else. But the three leads, Evangeline Lilly, Michael Douglas, and of course Paul Rudd, I thought were just wonderful. I don't think everything in it is absolutely perfect, but it's a film that constantly just filled me with wonder, and it had these action sequences that were so playful and innovative and fun. And it's a Marvel movie that is very light in its feet and fun, and I thought that was really nice.
It felt, and this is going to sound weird, but it felt more like a comic book movie than even the Avengers did.
Sure.
And you're absolutely right. That was the same. I like Corey Stoll more than everybody else at the table when we talked about it, but everybody else had the same criticism. Corey Stoll kind of very stoic. Didn't really.
I like him, but I didn't like his performance at all in that movie.
They basically said that it almost felt like he felt it was. If I could just, I guess, insert a phrase, he felt like a petulant child in the film.
Yeah,
very much, and he wanted to rebel, and it just kind of it felt a little immature for a guy that's so smart as he.
Yeah.
So. I can live with that, but I still thought that the Ant-Man was a great movie.
It is,
no doubt about it. That's 5, right?
Yeah,
bottom,
I think so.
Bottom 2, worst movies of the year. Or worst movies of the summer.
Well, summer, I'm sure they'll make my worst of the year list. Let's see. Well, for me, the biggest disappointment of the summer, so it kind of lurches in that direction, was Tomorrowland. This is a movie that had probably the most beautiful teaser trailer that I've
seen. That was on Gannon's bottom 2 as well.
The trailer makes it look like such a beautiful film, and I don't blame the trailer for not living up to the movie. It's not the film's fault. The film itself is just such a letdown. It's a series of bad choices. It starts off beautifully. It builds really well. Then somewhere around the second act, I don't know if it was the creepy robot kid or the really weird out-of-place ray gun shootouts or the fact that you'd never really spend any time in Tomorrowland or the fact that the movie had a good message, but just in case the audience missed it, they bash you over the head over it with over like 2 hours. Yeah, the movie just does not work, and it's a great, great cast, great director. Everything should have connected, and nothing
Brad
did.
Bird, Damon Lindelof is on it. George Clooney's in it.
Britt Robertson.
Yeah.
Yeah, Catherine Hahn's in it, too. Yeah, there's a lot of good, great people in it. Judy Greer has a cameo in it. Yeah, I couldn't have been more disappointed with it.
Okay. So that was your bottom. What is the next film?
The worst film I've seen this year so far, and I really hope it's the worst. I can't imagine seeing anything worse than the remake of Vacation. Torturous experience. It's bad as a remake and or sequel to Vacation, but it's bad as a movie. The editing is off. The jokes are awkwardly structured. The movie doesn't understand that jokes need to build and that you don't necessarily need to bat your audience over the head with them. It's not just that the jokes are crude and disgusting, which they are. Mm-hmm. The film, it's a poorly made movie. It doesn't work as a movie. It has all the awkwardness of Van Wilder. I mean, it's a movie that feels like it's been cut to shreds. Certain sequences go on too long. Certain sequences go on too short.
Yep.
Chevy Chase is barely in the movie. Like, it's not just bad because it sucks. It's bad because the filmmaking sucks. And
right.
That's... I mean, I cannot defend the movie on any level. I like a lot of the people in the film, Ed Helms mm-hmm. and Christina Applegate. I've loved them on other things. And I wanted to see Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo back. And seeing the way they were used in this movie, I wish they hadn't bothered. I wish nobody had bothered. The movie is just a train wreck.
Can I tell you that was in one of my top five favorite films of the summer? No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, my gosh.
I was in my bottom two. It was one of the worst movies of the summer.
You did see it.
I did see it. You paused for a minute like it was really in my top five.
Well, I thought... we got to discuss this now.
If I may.
Yes, what are your choices?
Jump aboard on this train. I won't give you my top five because I can't remember them at this time, but it was in no particular order. Ant-Man, Terminator Genisys, which I loved.
Wow.
Mission Impossible, which I loved.
Yeah.
Mad Max was my top movie of the summer, and I don't remember what the other one was.
San Andreas?
San Andreas didn't make the cut, unfortunately, and neither did
Jurassic World.
I can't remember at this time. You got to listen to the back episodes. They're there. But anyway, my bottom two were Fantastic Four, which is horrendous, and Vacation. If I may riff on Vacation really quickly... It is one of the worst films of the year. It is probably one of the worst films ever made, in my opinion. It is crude and disgusting for no apparent reason. I said this on the earlier podcast about it. It's as if they took a checklist of things that you would want in a comedy and just started to check them off. Oh, mom's a whore. Got it from college. Check.
Right.
Oh, we've got the proverbial the DNF jokes.
Right.
Check.
Right.
You know? They're swimming in a pile of poop. Check. It's in there. It just felt like a big checklist of crap. And it was horrendous. I tell you what, though. If I had to choose something, if I had to say this about the film, and this is, I will say that Chris Hemsworth was one of the best things about that film. He's in it for the perfect amount of time. He's funnier than the leads. He's funny in his role, and he really has a good time with it for as long as he's on screen. And I thought he was very fun for the 5 minutes that he's on there.
Yeah, it seemed like they were really going somewhere with his character.
Yes,
his character was so different from the rest of the movie, but
yes.
It felt like they're really building you something. And then they leave.
And they just leave.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's like, okay, is he going to be a rival for Ed Helms' character? Yeah. Is he gonna figure in the ending? No, but it feels like he's important part of the movie, and then they just cut out the rest of it.
And if I may say so, and I made this political statement on the Nerd Watch when I talked about this. This is what happens when you have liberal parents raising kids who have no respect for you or the house that they live in or their significant or their siblings. It borderline on assault and murder. Am I right or am I wrong?
Well, I don't even know if this movie deserves political analysis, but I understand what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It doesn't deserve any analysis because it was absolutely – it was disgusting. And I tell you what, the only other magic I felt was when Chevy Chase was on screen and I felt that little tinge. And
yeah, he's got this. I'll tell you the two parts in the movie that made me laugh, and maybe just because at this point I wanted to laugh so badly, I was like, my defenses were down. Chevy Chase has a line. I can't remember exactly what it is, but he makes a joke. He messes up Bob Dylan's line,
yes.
Like his name or whatever, and it's funny. It's like, okay, they gave Chevy something to do, and then that's like the end of Chevy's portion of the movie.
Yeah.
And then there's a, I don't know, I guess maybe because it just came out of nowhere and it made me laugh. Cause it's how random, and I hope they cleared it with him. But there's a moment where they're going through a list of all the really disgusting and inhibition list things that Christina Applegate did when she was in college.
Right,
and
right.
One of the random things that she did when she was, I think they call like Debbie Do Anything or whatever her name
right,
was.
Right, that was it, Debbie Do
right,
Anything.
Right, but one of the things they listed was that she slept with Anthony Hopkins. That made
right,
me laugh because
right.
I thought, well, right. At least I wasn't expecting that.
My
favorite, it's kind of clever.
My favorite thing in the film, in that movie, was when Ed Helm is about, he's at his dad's B&B, and I'm not spoiling anything because you don't want to watch this film, but he goes in and he says, Dad, I'm going home. Getting a flight out of here and I'm going home. And he says, you know, this is ridiculous. I can't take this anymore. And I'm going to paraphrase it essentially. He said, you can't leave because he said the journey has been horrible. And he said, and Chevy Chase turns to Ed Helm being his son and goes to Rusty. He says, Rusty, it's the journey that does suck. It makes you appreciate the destination. That was one of the greatest lines in the film. And like, it, the wisdom of Clark Griswold, you know, like what the magic that you miss from the old films was there for just like a split second.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when you go, you know, he says, the destination is where you want to go. It's the journey that sucks. You know, the destination is what makes you appreciate the journey. That's the whole point. So he said, you have to go. So when he said that, I literally almost teared up because I was like, man, I got the Clark that I wanted, and then he's gone.
Right.
You know, and it's like, ah, oh, man. You know, so suffice it to say, worst movie of the year, without a doubt. All of the guest stars were not used appropriately with the exception of Chris Hemsworth. Charlie Day, who's very funny, was unfunny, completely unfunny in this film.
Leslie Mann. I can't believe she was in the movie. I mean, when is she not funny?
Can I say this? This is what happens when you give the guys who did The Incredible Burt Wonderstone more leverage or more leeway in their
those
films.
Guys.
It's those guys.
Okay.
John Francis Daly. These are the guys that are writing the next Spider-Man movie, by the way.
Hmm.
So I'm now incredibly afraid for the film, for sure. But anyway, don't watch Vacation. Matter of fact, I equated it to an R-rated version of RV. And RV is bad.
RV is terrible.
It's horrible. But I love RV because it embraces its horribleness.
Sure.
And I actually watched that film several times, okay? It's an R-rated version of RV, but RV is a much better movie.
I'd rather watch RV,
yeah, without a doubt.
Me too.
Without a doubt, because that's exactly what it is. That's why you're laughing.
I get what I'm saying, but yeah, I agree. I'd rather watch RV again and again than ever sit there.
That's why you're laughing.
Is Pitch Perfect 2 on your best list?
It is not on my best list.
I'm a little surprised.
I almost eked it up there, but it was not on my list. I love that movie, by the way. Still do. I'll be owning it next week when it comes out on Blu-ray.
Oh, my gosh.
Love Pitch Perfect 2. And I like Pitch Perfect 1.
I'm not alone. I'm a horde of 14-year-old girls behind you.
I'm an acapella guy till I die. I love acapella music. But listen, we talked about Spider-Man, and I wanted to get your take before we wrap up here.
Yeah.
Big announcements while you were gone from the Nerd Watch. Marvel's movie cinematic universe committee basically was broken up by Kevin Feige. Big news, and I wanted to actually kind of get your take on it from an insider standpoint. Do you think this is good? Do you think that this is it came up so abruptly? Do you think that there's something going on? In the head of Marvel was having confrontations with Kevin Feige, and now Kevin Feige and that crew will no longer have any say in what's happening with the cinematic universe, and they're responsible for all of the good Marvel movies and not responsible for all the ones that sucked, like Iron Man 2, and I believe. The not so great ones,
okay,
as it were. Do you think that this is a big deal? That what you've read about, what's your take? I really like to know.
Oh gosh, I mean, for me, it's on the one hand, it's a business decision, but I also think they have a sense of what's working and what's not working.
The committee does, yes. I would think so, yes.
They do, because on the one hand, they've always been really open about this. It drives me nuts, as I've talked about in the show, it drives me nuts that a series of movies or like a slate of movies can be talked about openly as such an open product. When they announce like the list of like, oh, we got Guardians of the Galaxy 2 in 2017 and we got Spider-Man 12 and 2029. Like, they got these long grocery list of movies that are coming. And I'm like, Okay, that's... On the one hand, that's cool, and all the comic book fans are oohing and aahing, but on the other hand, it's like, that's not how movies are supposed to be made. It's supposed to be, like, one project at a time, you know, in every film, you know, you put your guts into it. You don't look at it like a product line. And I understand...
Disney does.
I know. And they're trying to do it like the way, you know, if you want Secret Wars and Secret Wars 2, you have to get this issue for the stories to all come together. Mm-hmm. So it's a similar idea. I get that. I respect that. But I think if anything has always worked with these movies, it's always been heart. It's always been the origin stories have always been very, very hard to top, because the origin, the story of someone becoming, of actualization, of someone understanding that I am Ant-Man or Iron Man or the Hulk, whoever it is.
Iron Man is still one of the best comic book movies ever.
And those stories are very, very hard to top. And whenever you do a sequel, you usually pack in way too much stuff, way too many characters, way too many bridge things. So I think a lot of the same problems has always existed with these films. And certainly with some of these properties, they've never been able to tell them properly or correctly, you know, without even naming obvious examples, which everyone knows about Fantastic Four. Some of these movies just don't work. They don't work. And sometimes they don't work because they've made changes. Sometimes they don't work because they're too faithful. And sometimes they don't work because they're movies that are trying to please everybody when all they need to do would be movies that have something interesting to say. Ant-Man, for all the problems that movie had something to say. It had a lot of heart. And it was actually really engaging. Aging movie. It didn't need the mythos of the Marvel universe around it. You may not agree with me. For me, the one scene in Ant-Man that I could have lived without, not a bad scene, fun scene, but the scene where they brought in Anthony Mackie's character. Mm. That was the one scene I thought the movie didn't really need it. They could have cut it out of the film. I would have been okay with it.
I love that scene.
It's a fun scene, but the movie didn't need it. And the movie didn't need the universe around it. I think that's one of the problems is when you, to use this term I just made up, when you productize a film to death, and the film basically just exists to sell action figures and to bridge other movies, I think there's a problem. The best movies in the Marvel Universe, whether it's Guardians of the Galaxy, those movies exist because they're good, not because they need to support, you know, a back catalog or front catalog of movies to be made or yet to be made.
But in all fairness, if I could be fair to the committee that will no longer have a say, they're the ones that established the universe from the get-go, that had this plan in place before Disney came along, number one. Number two, they have inputted everything until Civil War. All the storylines and that and such. They are the ones that probably ousted Edgar Wright as the director of Ant-Man. And to their credit, I mean, to be honest, they have a vision. And no director, no writer, no one is going to take that vision away from that Marvel committee. So it almost feels as if, like, it's almost like I almost equate it to George Lucas. I give George Lucas 110% of whatever he wants to do with his movies is completely up to him because he made it. So these guys are the ones that have to carry the mantle for Marvel and to at least pay some respect to the universe in which it comes from and the comic books in which they come from. So I do understand where you're coming from. But I think that they have the right to say, listen, this is not the direction we want it to go. And even though it may hurt the Marvel film, every single movie that's been successful is because of that committee. And I mean, we can't deny that. I mean, I know that I know losing Edgar Wright was a big deal even for the nerds. We love Edgar Wright. But let's be honest, Marvel has a story to tell. And they are leading this story up until 2019.
Yeah.
So now that they're out, Civil War is the last one they have input in. So we don't even – that's a very uncertain future. I mean, Disney's doing this – I mean, not to get back to – getting back to your point, Disney's doing the same thing with Star Wars.
Yeah.
They're already shooting Episode 8.
Right.
They're shooting Rogue One already. It's insane. Yeah. It's absolutely insane. We don't even know what the story of episode 7 is
yet.
We
don't know if The Force Awakens is going to deliver. And I know a bold thing to say. We don't. The Force Awakens could be a turkey. We don't know.
But I tell you what. We've already had Force fighting with a bunch of toys coming out already for the Star Wars thing. We had this big thing with the BB-8 having its roller, the rollerball robot that came out and everything.
Right.
So it's even more, like, using your word, which I say you can do because you're a professor. They really did a productization of the brand. So, you know, with Lucasfilm, it's one thing because now they can do whatever they want with it because it's no longer George Lucas's to mess with. Marvel, though, it's a different story altogether. You have a conglomerate of people trying to at least adhere to some kind of loyalty to the comics that came before it. Is that wrong, do you think, or?
Well, I mean, for me, it's a two-way street. I think the best comic book movies have their own identity. They're faithful to the basic backbone of the origin story, but you've got directors who are strong and have their own voice in there, too. I don't think it could just be a facsimile of the comic book. That's one of the reasons.
Right, and they're not.
Yeah, yeah.
And
the best movies are not. They do some alterations or whatever. But the best comic movies, you know, they reflect the original story, just like any good adaptation has its liberty.
But they respect the origin. And that's they've done that in every film, I think, to be honest. Yeah,
this, I'm trying to think of what it could have been. I mean, like, have there been any Marvel movies so far that haven't delivered?
Oh, no, I can tell you what it is. Kevin Feige was getting ticked off at having to go to the president or the chairman of Marvel at the time and say, this is what we want to do with Civil War. He was getting ticked off that they were spending so much money on Civil War. And they're saying, this is what needs to be done. Civil War is an Avengers movie without having the tag of an Avengers movie on it because there's so many heroes in it. So this movie now, officially, at least for me, is overstuffed. More overstuffed than pray tell Batman v Superman. It's more overstuffed than that. Yes, they have established characters, but that doesn't mean anything if you can't tell the stories.
That worries me. Spielberg made a comment recently. I thought it was a great come to hear
it's
about
it. It's
going to
go the Western.
The Western. That is scary because he has a good point. The Westerns, at one point, they just got too much of the same thing. They got too big and they got too similar. After a while, it's like how many movies with cowboys and Indians shooting each other can we sit through without them having any heart or anything distinct to distinct them?
So is he a so Spielberg may be a soothsayer.
He's been, if anybody in Hollywood, he claims that he doesn't have a crystal ball, but if anybody in Hollywood has a crystal ball and can really see trends that are coming and going, not to mention creating trends of his own, it's Steven Spielberg.
Zack Snyder even said that he may not be wrong. So that's interesting. But anyway, I just wanted to get your take on the whole Marvel thing. I'm interested to see the next Marvel film after Civil War now. That's the one I'm interested in seeing.
It's making movies a product scares me because that's what killed New Line Cinema. Just to give a little button on this, remember New Line put all of its ducks in a row, Lord of the Rings, it paid off. But then they tried the same thing again with the Golden Compass. It killed the studio.
Yeah, it did.
When you make a movie and it's all about the product lines and the sequels coming afterwards and bridging the worlds and creating new worlds, that's great for a company, but the movie itself has to work. Golden Compass didn't work, and then New Line is no longer the entity that used to be.
Yeah, for sure. So, Professor Barry, let's wrap this sucker up. Let's put a little button on it, like you said. What's the next film we're going to watch?
You know, I think Black Mass.
Oh, Black Mass.
I want to see Black Mass.
I do, too. And, you know, we were contemplating whether or not that's something that is nerd-friendly. And or in the realm of, and I said, and I have, and this may be not a cool thing to say, but Whitey Bulger is kind of pop culture in a sense because of his gruesome and awfulness of the guy that he was. So I think it'd be fair if we reviewed the film on the Nerd Watch.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jack Nicholson basically played a fictionalized version of him in The Departed.
Yes.
This character has entered gangster lore the same way John Gotti and Charles Luciano and Bugsy Malone and all those guys, you know, are very much a part of, you know, the lore of gangsterism.
Good. All right, so we're watching Black Mass.
Yeah.
Also coming out is The Scorch Trials, the Maze Runner movie.
Yeah. I don't know, because I liked the first one a lot more than I thought it would. But I can't say I'm excited about the sequel.
Wow, amazing. I thought you'd like, because you were the one that was raving about Maze Runner.
I really enjoyed the Maze Runner. I don't know about this movie. I don't know. The first one just didn't. I liked it so much, but the look of the sequel just doesn't grab me, and it looks like a very different film.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Well, listen, if you're going to do Black Mass, let me know. I would like to come with you.
Likewise.
I'd like to go watch that. I'd like to go watch that with you for sure. Just to give you an update, at the end of this month, we're going to be doing a commentary. Hopefully, you can make it. Actually, the commentary that we're going to be doing is completely up to you, by the way, if you do make it. So let us know. Okay. Gannon's excited. Format's excited. They're very excited about it. They're very... By the way, something I didn't mention,
okay,
and I should have mentioned earlier.
Here we go.
Professor Barry, we normally record these shows on a Tuesday night. I can't believe I buried the lead on this or didn't even talk about it in the beginning of the show. We normally record our shows on Tuesday. We had to move the show up, the pod up, and to Monday because... Alika from the comic book store was not going to be there, so he wanted us to come a day early, which was completely fine. Not knowing that Professor Barry, who's been out for quite a while tending to some other business, was going to show up tonight at the comic book store ready to surprise everybody's pants off, which would have been awesome, by the way, and then no one's there.
No one. I'm driving up and thinking, oh, this is great. Like, I didn't think I had the night off. Then I did. I'm driving home. Like, oh, I even had a DVD of House Party.
Look at you.
This is going to be so great. And I had this great, I was going to surprise you and Jason with the news and just, yeah. And then I get there and like, no one's here tonight. Like, what? The one night I can make it?
Unbelievable. Well, listen, Barry, I'm so glad you did come. We had this impromptu. It worked out perfectly because, once again, the pod that you're never going to hear happened yesterday because of technical issues won't be heard ever. One of the greatest shows, Nerdwatch shows of all time, happened yesterday.
Episode.
It's going to be, it's not just a lost episode, it is lost forever in the ether. I have about 6 minutes of it, and that's it.
You're going to post it online?
Yeah, right.
So like little taste of the Ark of the Covenant.
That's
that
right.
No one will ever hear. Yeah.
We talked about like Shattered Empire, the new comic book for Star Wars. We talked about the Star Wars game that came out for mobile, which is all canon now. We talked about what would Barry rate it. We had like all these double entendres on the show. It was crazy. We had all of these crazy things on it. It was insane.
Gone.
It was
lost shows. Forever.
Gone. Absolutely gone. So, but anyway, listen, Professor Barry, I really appreciate you coming down today. It actually worked out perfect. It was kismet.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
We certainly appreciate you being here. You guys can follow us on the Nerd Watch. Professor Barry right now has a bunch of looking back reviews on there right now for After Hours and Nixon on there.
And this weekend it's going to be Walter Hill's Wild Bill.
Love that movie.
And I would call it a guilty pleasure, but I've never felt remotely guilty about my pleasure for it, and that is A Sound of Thunder.
I love A Sound
Thank
of
you.
Thunder.
Me too.
I'm like one of
Me
the
too.
Only people.
It's such a fun movie.
It's a fun movie. Yeah. You know, yeah. And I have to say that I think that was, I think that that film was rightfully maligned.
Yes.
But if you were to pull back just a little bit from the criticism, you would see a fun sci-fi movie that harkened back to like bad B films from the 50s.
Yes, and rightfully so. The movie is not finished. The special effects are not finished.
No.
It is a movie that had a huge budget and a lot of it was kind of lost. And there were changes in directors and changes in actors. It was shelved for years. Mm-hmm. And yet the movie as is, it's an adaptation. A pretty good adaptation of a Ray Bradbury story, and it's fun. It's a fun movie.
Yeah, I can't wait to read that. That'll be a lot.
Thank
that
you.
That'll be fun for sure. You can read all of Barry's reviews and all of our reviews, and keep up with what's going on in Nerd on Maui at facebook.com/TheNerdWatch. You can follow us on Twitter @NerdWatchNation, and you can even follow us on Instagram @The_NerdWatch. And you can also listen to us on the radio if you live on Maui at KAKU 88.5 every Thursday at 3 p.m. Speaking of that, Professor Barry, would you like to plug your show on Akaku?
Well, it's on at sporadic times, but I have a show on Akaku on the network.
That
it's,
deals with?
It's a movie review show. It's called Maui Movie Guy, The Worst, The Best, and All the Rest. And I review a couple movies for the weekend. And let's see, the episode that's coming up will be episode 5. And that's dealing with, I rate Straight Outta Compton, Woody Allen's Irrational Man, Shaun the Sheep, and The Gift.
Ooh, fantastic. So you can check that on at sporadic times on what channel?
53, 54, and 55. I'm not sure when, I'm not sure which, but I swear I'm on there. You just got to check your local listings.
Check your local listings, because he's on TV.
Somewhere, that's somehow, right. I'm on Akaku.
Yeah, he has a face for TV, I've got the face for radio. So, ladies and gentlemen, it has been an absolute pleasure to be here with you. Barry, I could not have been more surprised. I'm so happy you and I were able to do this. I got to see you more in the last several days than in the last several months.
Yeah,
so it's been real fun. I think the guys are going to be jealous. They're going to be mad that they're going to hear this instead of the show that they thought was going to be
put
up.
The greatest show in podcast history that no one will ever hear.
History. Absolutely. Follow us on, like I said, follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. Please rate the show as well on iTunes or whatever podcast aggregate that you use. Rate us. Let us know what you think. There's more reviews of the show up as well. I'm still hate spewing and, you know, things of that nature.
Your review of The Visit is up. People should read that.
My review of The Visit is up. My review of San Andreas is up. My review of Avengers is up. And my review of Ted 2.
And
Mad Max Fury Road is also up. We've got a ton of stuff up there right now. So please check it out. It's on MauiWatch.com. You can read my reviews, Professor Barry's reviews, Format's reviews, all at MauiWatch.com. Barry, it's been real. It's been fun. I hope you can make it at the end of the month. We're actually meeting on Tuesday, the last Tuesday of the month. Okay? Stuff that House Party DVD underneath your chair again.
All right.
Just in case. But I can't wait till the guys hear this show, and I can't wait until they find out that you tried to surprise us.
Tried and failed.
Miserably.
But this worked out.
This worked out absolutely beautifully. Yeah. And once again, just for the record, I personally am completely humbled to be a part of the Hawaii Film Critics Society. Thank you for bringing me on to that. I certainly appreciate that very much. I hope it lends a little credence to my bloviating.
I don't even know what that word is. It's a good word. What does it mean?
It's a guy that bloviates about big mouth moron. That's me. Just talks about everything.
An unkind word.
Yeah. I know. Everybody bloviates. I'm more of a bloviator than others. I'm a big.
Well, I'm pretentious. I'll use that word.
Yeah. There you go. I can be a pretentious D-bag. That's for sure. And I get that. And I thank you for bringing me on anyway. I certainly do appreciate it.
Of course, buddy.
Thank you very, very much. And I'm sure that since Format's not here, he would also have the same retort as I would.
Well, likewise. I'm flattered and thrilled that you guys are in. So, yeah, this is going to be fun.
I can't wait till I get my first Hawaii Film Critics Society voting card. I can't wait. Is there an official, like, membership card?
I could write one for you.
Oh, man.
In ink.
In ink? So it'd be permanent. All right.
Yes. With a Sharpie. Yes.
So I'm part of the Film Critics Society in perpetuity right now.
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. That is fantastic.
You might want to lower your expectations. Okay. Maybe I can come up with a t-shirt. How's that?
Right.
And a balloon.
Hawaii Film Critics Society member.
There you go.
Members only. All right. So next week, just to let you know, Barry, we are going next week Tuesday when we meet again. You may or may not be there, but we will be covering more of what happened over the weekend because we're getting our first amazing Hawaii Comic Con. And Gannon is going. I unfortunately will not be able to make it, but I have a good friend of mine who's doing a guest correspondence down there. He's an officer of the law, and he will be doing guest correspondence, and has pictures and videos of everything that's happening down at the amazing Hawaii Comic Con this weekend, from 18th, 19th, and the 20th. It's nice. My hope is that Hawaii receives it very well, and I think they will, considering the fact that cosplay is such a huge thing in the islands anyway.
Yeah.
So hopefully the industry will recognize how important Hawaii is to comic books, to film, to games, to all of those things. I hope we're recognized for that, and I hope that this is just a small step in that direction.
Likewise.
So hopefully we'll have some fun stuff to talk about next week if you happen to be there, or you'll just be listening.
I will be listening.
Fantastic. Well, Barry, hopefully we'll see you sooner rather than later. At least if we can make it for the last Tuesday of the month, we'll do a commentary regardless.
All right.
Anything you'd like to add before we take off out of here?
Oh, nothing. No, this is fun.
This is fun.
Glad we did this.
I'm really glad you, like I said, I'm really glad you came down. So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, peace out, much love, and most assuredly, always stay nerdy. And until next time, with or without Professor Barry, either one is fine, but it's always better with Barry, we say to you, Aloha.